Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Boston Red Sox fans? This is Locked On Red Sox here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Gabrielle, founder of Girl at the Game. And for the first time ever, we are doing something really special here on the Locked On Podcast Network's MLB section. It is Division Day every Wednesday for the month of March. I'll be speaking with a different American League East host to do a crossover talking about both of our teams every Wednesday. So make sure to subscribe so you never miss it. Today, to kick it off, I am joined by Connor Newcomb, host of Locked On Orioles, to talk about the two teams that were really the bottom of the barrel, the cellar dwellers of the American League East. Of course, our very own Boston Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles. So let's kick it off. Talk about your team. First of all, obviously, how incredible was it to have Trey Mancini back? And I believe I saw that he got a hit in his first at bat.
Yeah, I mean, that was incredible to see. And he gets standing ovation from the small amount of fans and the Pirates and the Orioles giving a standing O as well. And you know, it's not the same thing that it will be when he steps on the field on April 1st on opening day when the games really count. But he did get a hit. You know, it would have been nice to see that in a television broadcast, but we did not get that yesterday. So we just got some side video from the Orioles. But he's obviously going to be the story for the Orioles this year, you know, coming off of a colon cancer diagnosis, beating it, you know, can he be back to what he was in 2019, which was really an all-star snub. But that was such a great moment on Sunday.
It's so special, especially because he's now one of your veteran players. He's such a staple on the Orioles. His absence was really felt last year. And obviously everybody was pulling for him. Baseball is so special in that way. I mean, just these moments in baseball that kind of defy explanation and reality, where it really shows you what a special game it is. Speaking of batting, Cedric Mullins, I saw that he is only going to be batting lefty from now on. Can you explain kind of the thought process behind that and what it means for him and the lineup?
Yeah, so it's interesting because, you know, he is not, you know, set in as an everyday player at this point. Mullins is really in a center field battle right now with Austin Hayes. And both of those players are going to be on the opening day roster no matter what. It's just a question of, you know, who's going to be the starting center fielder and who is really going to be the fourth outfielder for the Orioles. And right now, you know, I would give Austin Hayes, kind of a tick in the right direction over Mullins at this point. But, you know, for Cedric Mullins, he brings more speed. He's a better defender than Hayes is. Hayes is just a better hitter. And, you know, Mullins has been a switch hitter in his career, but he has been absolutely abysmal from the right side of the plate in his career. He is a 147 career hitter from the right side of the plate in 111 plate appearances. I mean, you look at his numbers, he's got one home run and one double, just two extra base hits in 111 plate appearances as a righty, just 14 hits, as opposed to, you know, he's a 251 hitter. You know, his OPS plus, you know, is over 100. So he's actually an above average hitter from the left side. And last year, it was really tough to watch when he would hit right-handed. And he basically decided this offseason, like, it's not working. You know, my bat is my biggest question mark and the biggest thing keeping him from being an everyday center fielder. And I think he just said, look, I'm going to stop focusing on that right side and just go to the left side. And it does open up a door for potentially there to be a platoon in center field, because Mullins is now a straight up left-handed hitter and Hayes is a straight up right-handed hitter. So it does open more doors. And, you know, I think the pushback would be, if you're trying to win a job, why would you make yourself less versatile and, you know, stop switch hitting? He was so bad right-handed that it honestly makes him more valuable to just drop being a switch hitter and hit lefty. And so it'll be really interesting to now see if it becomes some sort of platoon situation in center field.
Yeah, I saw that before he made his debut, he was hitting 210 with a 615 OPS from the right side before his 2018 debut. So obviously at that point, like, can you even really call yourself a switch hitter? Like, yes, you can physically hit the baseball, but, like, you know, he's not one of those guys who's just, the numbers are so close. So that's great. Honestly, you know, you got to play to your strengths. Literally, real quick before we get into my team, I am curious though. I saw that Yusnel Diaz, one of your top prospects, homered yesterday. What are you thinking for him this season? Is he going to be making his debut? Talk to me about the prospects that you guys have angling to get in there.
Yeah, for Diaz, I would say 100% he's going to make his major league debut at some point in 2021. He was the top prize in the Manny Machado trade from the Dodgers 2 years ago, and everyone thought he would be the first one to be in the majors. That was not the case. Dean Kramer came up last year before Yusnel, and then frankly had a great four starts with the Orioles. And so now it's up to Diaz, who has been held back because he's had some injury issues over the past couple of years. But when he's been healthy, he's been great. He's a power hitting corner outfielder with a really good arm. You know, he's not going to be a gold glover, but he can play left field and right field. And when he gets the ball, you do not want to run on him in the corner outfield. He's got a lot of pop. He homered on Sunday against the Pirates, actually against former Oriole Carson Fulmer. And, you know, it's interesting because the Orioles have a very crowded outfield. You know, I just talked about Cedric Mullins and Austin Hayes. You know, they're battling it out for center field. They're both going to be on the roster. You've got Anthony Santander in right field, who just won a gold glove last year and had kind of his breakout season. And then you've got Ryan Mountcastle in left field, who came up midway through last season, continued to hit the ball like crazy. And I think he's one of the favorites for AL Rookie of the Year in 2021. So you have that whole crowded outfield. Then you have Yusnel Diaz. Where do you fit him in? You know, he might be a kind of a DH situation. You also have DJ Stewart, who basically turned into Babe Ruth for 2 weeks last season. He's in that outfield mix as well. And so it's all about Diaz, you know, finding his strengths. You know, can he be good enough defensively where they can keep him on the roster? And can he beat out one of these guys who had a really good 2020? But he's definitely the most exciting prospect that we're going to see the soonest here in 2021. And then kind of besides him, the really other big thing is, all right, let's see a full season out of Dean Kramer, who I mentioned. And can he be maybe a number two or three starter, which is what he looked like, you know, for those short amount of starts last year?
Well, you know, it seems like the Orioles are starting to turn it around. So hopefully this season will be a little bit more positive than your last few seasons. But before we talk about my team, obviously we have to talk about our favorite sponsor, Built Bar. They make the best tasting protein bars on the market. These bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. So they're great if you're looking to lose or maintain weight. If you're someone who loves the keto diet, each of these bars is soft, easy to chew, coated in 100% chocolate, and they have so many amazing flavors. So they're definitely going to have something for everyone. And for a limited time only, they are giving our listeners 20% off. And we have a brand new promo code for you this month. When you go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON20 to get 20% off your next order. And that promo code works if you're a first-time buyer or a repeat customer, because once you try these Built Bars, you are going to want to eat them every single day. So again, that's promo code LOCKEDON20 for 20% off at builtbar.com.
Yeah, and Gabrielle, we're, you know, about to flip things to the Red Sox. And obviously, you know, I've got you covered on everything Orioles. You've got us covered on everything Red Sox. But, you know, looking around the rest of sports, you know, you want to get your coverage there as well. Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your pods. And so we flip to the Red Sox side of this crossover. And Gabrielle, you know, this was the looming question all year last year for the Red Sox, and the reason why they, you know, were kind of neck and neck with the Orioles all season for being the worst team in the AL East. And that is, who is going to get guys out on the mound for the Red Sox? And I know Chris Sale is still on this team, but he is on the injured list. And I'm assuming he's going to start the season on the injured list once again. So there were a lot of guys no one had ever heard of starting games for the Red Sox last year. What does that rotation look like at this point? And how similar will it be to last year in terms of, is it going to be kind of the biggest problem for this team?
Oh, man. All right. Well, for starters, literally, Chris Sale will definitely be starting the season on the injured list. He's projected to make his return, if we're lucky, in May. More likely June. He and Noah Syndergaard had their Tommy Johns around the same time last March, which is crazy to say that that's already a year ago, but they're about almost exactly a year removed from their Tommy Johns. And he is throwing, but he will not be ready. You will not see him. He will not sniff a major league game for a while. So without him And without Eduardo Rodriguez potentially for a little while, this starting rotation has Nathan Eovaldi, Martin Perez, Garrett Richards, Nick Pivetta, probably potentially Tanner Houck. I'm definitely honestly forgetting someone at this point. This team of mine has made so many off-season changes that it's honestly hard to keep track at this point of who is on the team. But it is interesting to note that Garrett Richards, who they signed this year, did not actually have as bad of a year as people think. He had a 4.03 ERA for the Padres in 2020, but six of his runs allowed came in one game against the Mariners. And in his other 13 outings, he had a 3.02 ERA. And his final seven appearances, a 2.25 ERA, 21 strikeouts, three walks, and his opponents were only hitting 181 against him. So this is a guy, it's again, the same thing with like Adam Ottavino, for example, who the Red Sox traded for this year from the Yankees in a rare rivalry trade. These are guys who had their 2020 stats skewed by one horrific outing. And because we only had 60 games in 2020, there are a ton of players who had their entire season ruined by that one bad game. So I think that if Garrett Richards can come in and kind of have that final seven appearances, or even like his majority appearances-esque, you know, season for the Red Sox, he can really be a valuable member of this pitching staff. But honestly, at this point, I feel like Cora is going to try everybody out during spring training. We're going to see some really weird appearances. You know, they're going to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. But the nice thing that's different about this year versus last year is that this year they actually have enough people to do that with, as opposed to just recycling AAA pitchers who aren't ready. This year we actually have major league arms, and that is a very welcome change. So anything from this year already is an improvement, just based on the fact that they have more people who can throw a baseball.
Yeah, the Orioles and Red Sox will open up the season against each other again this year. And you know, last year we saw Eovaldi and then Perez, and then I think it might have been Ryan Weber in that Sunday game. I don't know. It was not the names you wanted, but it looks like at least this year that even without Sale and Rodriguez again, that Eovaldi, Perez, and Richards is so much better for their first three in that rotation. Just adding Garrett Richards. I know he's not, you know, what he was at his peak a few years ago when people really thought he could be somebody's ace. But he's still pretty good. And I think that was a huge signing for the Red Sox. But, you know, the pitching is obviously their big question. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez will be healthy enough to pitch. And you know, hopefully for the Red Sox, they get Chris Sale back. And then it turns into a good major league rotation once again. But I wanted to ask, as kind of my other big storyline for the Red Sox, about the outfield, because the, you know, killer bees, as some may have called them, are all gone. Benintendi traded to the Royals. Of course, Mookie Betts was traded to the Dodgers last year. And, you know, Jackie Bradley is still a free agent. And, you know, it's kind of assumed at this point, it feels like, that he won't come back to Boston, although it's still possible. So, you know, we talked last year about how, oh, Betts is gone, but this lineup still looks pretty good and fairly similar. That won't be the case in 2021. The outfield has kind of gone through an overhaul. So who is out there now? And do you think they have a chance to replace, you know, what the Red Sox have gotten in the past out of at least Benintendi and Bradley?
You know, honestly, at this point, we have so many guys who are vying for spots on the major league roster. You know, yesterday, Jarren Duran was playing in center field and is presumed to make his major league debut at some point this season. We got Hunter Renfroe this winter, and we obviously have Alex Verdugo from the trade. Kike Hernandez has played every single position except for catching. There are a lot of guys who can play the outfield. I mean, on Monday, JD Martinez made his spring training debut in left field, which is honestly kind of hilarious to me, just because Alex Cora has said recently that he didn't really want JD playing the outfield. JD Martinez told Nesson's Tom Caron that he missed playing the outfield last year. He said it made it harder for him to be a good hitter because he wasn't playing in the outfield, even though every time he does play the outfield, he ends up with back spasms and doesn't play for a few days. So that's kind of an interesting little back and forth he has going there with his coaches and manager. You know, you're going to see a lot of guys who are splitting time platooning in the outfield this year. You know, Alex Verdugo made some really impressive catches last year. I think that the outfield will probably be fine. But Fenway Park has an interestingly constructed outfield, especially with all of its corners. You know, it's the oldest ballpark in Major League Baseball, and you've just got the triangle in center field. You've got the corner in right field. And of course, you got to play off the monster in left. And it's just the kind of place where, like, Jackie Bradley Jr. really thrived in center field because he knew it like the back of his hand. He had Red Sox legends like Jim Rice and Fred Lynn saying that he's one of the best outfielders to ever play the game at Fenway Park. I think you're going to really feel his absence from this team when you see all of the home runs being given up by Red Sox pitchers. I hope it won't happen, but we both know it's going to happen. You will feel it when he's not out there to save the day every single game with one of his amazing robberies, those like leaping grabs. If you think about how bad Red Sox pitching has been the last 2 years, think about how much worse it would have been if Jackie Bradley Jr. wasn't out there saving their butts every single game. Literally up until the final game of the 2020 season against the Braves, he was making robberies. And I just really feel like it's a shame that no team has signed him yet. It's a shame that the Red Sox did what they did in terms of just kind of letting him walk and all of these years of thinking about trading him. He is such an underrated player. And I know that you were asking about the current outfield, but to me, the current outfield is not going to compare even to JBJ by himself out there, because honestly, he could patrol that outfield on his own.
Yeah. And as Orioles fans, we're not going to lie, happy to see.
I know JBJ he out killed of the you division. Guys a couple times.
He made more incredible catches against the Orioles than all the other teams combined, it seems like. But you know, you talked about Hunter Renfroe, JD Martinez. You know, they got Franchy Cordero in that trade with the Royals. Maybe he'll be out there. And then someone you mentioned too, you know, they got Kike Hernandez, also Marwin Gonzalez. Those are guys who, you know, are listed as infielders, but they can play the outfield too. And so I think, you know, the Red Sox didn't do a good job in that they didn't bring Bradley back, but I think they did a good job in at least bringing in a lot of different options to kind of fill that outfield. But we're going to get to our predictions up next about these two teams and how they'll fare in 2021. But first, of course, baseball is creeping closer and closer, and the sports world is heating up once again. And over at betonline.ag, you can place wagers on all your favorite sports, and it's the easiest way to bet on all of that sports action. Now, we might not have baseball just yet until opening day on April 1st, but it's March Madness time in college basketball, and the NBA and NHL are in full swing as well. Big award show Sunday night as well. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. They've got real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. And BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head over to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit over at betonline.ag. BetOnline. Your online sportsbook experts.
Connor, are you doing our Locked On MLB Fantasy Baseball League this year?
I am.
You are? All right. So I am too. And between us and all of the other fantasy baseball addicts out there, there is now a new resource to help us and you, our listeners, get an advantage in the leagues. We have Locked On Fantasy Baseball, a daily fantasy baseball podcast hosted by veteran fantasy analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of fantasy baseball experience to offer the strategies and waiver wire pickups that lead to league wins. Season-long fantasy, dynasty leagues, DFS, Locked On Fantasy Baseball covers it all. It's going to be a tool for all of us here in our league and yours. So subscribe to Locked On Fantasy Baseball wherever you get podcasts.
So it's prediction time, Gabrielle, and on our final little segment here of this Orioles Red Sox crossover. And of course, we got to start with record predictions for these two teams. Now, Boston last year, 24-36, they finished in last in the AL East. The Orioles, 25-35, did somehow finish one game ahead of the Red Sox and in fourth place. So, you know, the Orioles are probably going to hang out right around that. I would think the Red Sox probably win more games than the Orioles in this longer 162 game season. So I start with you. Win prediction for the Red Sox. You know, are they a middling team again, like they were last year? Are they competing for the playoffs, or are they just kind of somewhere in the middle?
You know, honestly, I think that a lot of this season just comes down to luck. The same way in 2018, you know, they got lucky that their entire starting rotation was pretty much healthy the entire season. I mean, that's how they got to the postseason. A lot of variables have to go right for the Red Sox combined. It's not just one. You know, it's not Chris Sale by himself who can come back and rescue the team a la David Ortiz in the 2013 postseason. This team is going to have to cohesively work together with a ton of new players. We've got Alex Cora back. We have no idea what Eduardo Rodriguez is going to look like. There are so many things that are just question marks. I honestly think this team could literally be anywhere from a barely 500 team to a wild card team. I don't think they have the goods to go past a wild card game, but if everything goes right for them, you know, like I said, if Garrett Richards can be the Garrett Richards that he's been a few years ago, if Adam Ottavino can get back into his form of like, I could strike out Babe Ruth mentality, there are a lot of good pieces that the Red Sox picked up this year. And health has really been one of the biggest gut punches to this team over the past two seasons, is just, can we get a healthy starting rotation that is effective? So again, anywhere from a barely 500 team to a wild card team, I think they're going to be better than we expect, but I'm also going to try to keep my expectations low so I'm not disappointed again. What are we thinking for your team?
Yeah. And it's hard too, because, you know, actually did a little Orioles Pirates crossover back on Friday's episode with Ethan Smith, and, you know, kind of talked about just being each team probably being the worst team in their respective leagues, the AL and the NL, but the records might look different because the Pirates are playing in the worst division of baseball. And you could argue that the Orioles are playing in the best division of baseball. And so despite the fact that I think the Orioles are a better team than Pittsburgh, it might not look that way in the record column. I still think the Orioles are going to improve. You know, you kind of throw last year out because of the 60 games, but they won 47 games in 2018. They won 54 games in 2019. So I'll say they increased by 7 once again. My record guess is going to be 61 and 101. I think they'll kind of flirt with not losing 100 games this year. They've definitely got some pieces that could help them. But when you have to play the Yankees, the Rays, and the Blue Jays all 19 times, and then a Red Sox team that I think they're definitely better than they did last year, and you continue to have to play all those teams, it's just going to be tough to find, you know, somewhere near 70 wins. I think they do break the 60 win mark. And I think they'll be right in the conversation for the number one pick once again. But I think you'll definitely see some upgrades and a lot more hope this year. And then I think 2022 becomes the year where, you know, they definitely don't lose 100 games and they start to look a lot more competent. But Gabrielle, these two teams play 19 times again, because we are back to the full 162 game season. What's throw a number out there. How many games out of the 19 do you think the Red Sox win against the Orioles?
You know, I think it's one of those interesting things where when you have two teams that were, like last year, kind of Spider-Man versus Spider-Manning each other to be like the least terrible team out of our division, I think that your team is still going to challenge my team in ways that kind of befuddle. I mean, I think back to that game. I think it was Asher Wojciechowski pitched like 7 shutout innings against the Red Sox in 2019 or 2018 or something. And it was so random, but, you know, it's that old saying, any team can get you, you know, any team can have their day. You can be the best team in baseball, like the 2018 Red Sox. You can still get no hit by Sean Manaea and the Oakland A's. I think it'll probably come down to maybe my team wins 11 out of the 19 matchups. You know, it's not by far, but it's, you know, we win the matchup by 2 or 3 games. What do you think?
I think that's honestly right on. I would say maybe the Orioles win 8 out of 19. So the Red Sox get 11. I think this is definitely the Orioles' best chance to have a winning series record against any of the AL East teams this year, because the Yankees are just going to beat them up again. The Blue Jays look a lot better, and the Rays are the Rays. And, you know, no matter how good the Rays and Orioles are, they always play, you know, seemingly a one run game every time they meet, it feels like. So I think the Red Sox, there's a chance the Orioles just continue to play pretty well at Fenway, even when they've been bad. So that
I was
going to
say, I feel like you guys won a lot of games at Fenway over the last 2 years, because the Red Sox have actually been really bad in 2019 and 2019 in their home ballpark, which I find frankly very insulting, considering it's the oldest ballpark in the country and deserves better. But, you know, that's a whole different story.
Yeah. And the Orioles were pretty good in Fenway. Honestly, a lot of the reason why they were, you know, did well in the division, had good records against the Red Sox back in the early 2010s and, you know, like 2012 through 16, when the Orioles were in the playoff race every year, is because of how well they played at Fenway in that stretch. It was really probably the best, you know, visiting park in the AL East, where they had the best record. And so, you know, I think that'll help. I do think they lose the series, but again, maybe 11-8, 10-9 in favor of the Red Sox. But the last thing I wanted to do for predictions, one breakout player, and I think these two teams are more interesting breakout players because I think there's still a lot of unknown pitchers on both teams. And for the Orioles, it's unknown hitters and pitchers. But for the Red Sox, you know, if you had to predict one breakout for the 2021 season, who would it be?
I'm hoping it's going to be Tanner Houck. He had three starts last September. He finally got called up and made three starts, and all three of his starts came against eventual postseason teams. He pitched against the Marlins, the Braves, and the Yankees, and he struck out at least seven batters in each of those starts. He went at least five innings in each of those starts, which, you know, if you talk to someone like Pedro Martinez, only going five innings is like a travesty, but that's, I mean, nowadays we consider five or six innings like a really good start, or at least Boston Red Sox fans do. Tanner Houck is probably going to have to fight to get into the starting rotation at the beginning of the season. I know that Chaim Bloom said that his offseason goal was to make it really difficult for Houck to be in the starting rotation, just in terms of the fact that they needed to acquire some more veteran arms. But he really impressed in those three starts, and I'm hopeful that this can be one of the very rare instances where the Red Sox have actually developed an amazing starting pitcher. Like, watching him last season was one of the only things that gave me hope in one of the worst, you know, most frustrating seasons in Red Sox franchise history. So I am hopeful. I think he is going to be just a really special part of this Red Sox season. We talked a little earlier about Yasiel Diaz, and obviously Ryan Mountcastle has had a lot of buzz. You talked about Dean Kramer for a second. Who do you think is going to be your team's breakout player of the year?
Yeah, I do want to mention someone who I haven't mentioned yet. And it's interesting because a lot of these Orioles guys have kind of had their at least small breakouts already. You know, John Means was an all-star in 2019. You had Ryan Mountcastle essentially break out as soon as he came to the big leagues last year. Anthony Santander, I think, is on most people's radars at this point, so not as much of a breakout candidate. And of course, a guy like Trey Mancini, everybody knows is as kind of the best hitter on this team. So I'm going to go for one of the Orioles' kind of younger arms that they have on this team. And, you know, this is a little bit of a stretch because we don't exactly know how much a lot of these young guys are really going to get a chance to pitch for the Orioles this season. But I'm going to say Michael Baumann. He is a right-hander in the Orioles system. He's one of their top 10 prospects, and he has not made his major league debut yet, but although he probably won't be on the opening day roster, he will be in the majors this year. It's kind of a question about, you know, will he be a starter or will he be a reliever? Cause he's got really electric stuff. But you know, they don't know if he'll be a guy who goes 7-8 innings every night. But every time they ask Brandon Hyde about a young pitcher who's standing out, it continues to be Michael Baumann. He's got this fastball in the upper 90s. He's got this elite electric off-speed stuff. And he's kind of sitting behind Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall, who are the Orioles' top two pitching prospects that are, of course, the names that get named in the top 100 prospects, you know, by Fangraphs and Baseball America, and everyone talks about. Michael Baumann is going to sneak up on people. He's going to get his debut this year, and I think it might be in a relief role, but I think the Orioles are going to find that they have one of their best pitchers over the next few years. And he's probably not the number one breakout candidate because, you know, there's some other names that I've already mentioned, but wanted to get one more name in there that people should maybe look out for.
Awesome. I mean, I think everyone's kind of ready to see the Orioles turn it around. You know, it's not fun for Orioles fans. It's not really, it's bad for baseball when teams are as bad as, your team and a few other teams have been over the past few years. You know, it's more fun when you get to watch competitive teams play each other. And I think that that's obviously a much longer, larger conversation, but it's time for the Orioles to have their time in the sun.
Yeah, it hasn't been fun. They're going to lose for a couple more years, but I'm hoping 2023 is the year of winning again. I'd obviously like to see this team spend a lot more and not cut payroll as much as they have, but again, a whole nother conversation. And hey, you know what? At the very least, Gabrielle, you know, these two teams meet on opening day again. If the Red Sox are bad again, the Orioles will have somebody that they can play fairly evenly in the division. And if not, there will be four teams in one division competing for a playoff spot, which is good for baseball on the other side as well.
Well, opening day is officially less than a month away. I'm very excited. And you know what? Even if the teams are bad, we're getting a full season of baseball with fans in the stands. And honestly, at this point, that is all I care about. So here's to 2021.
Can't wait for it.
This has been your first division day of the month of March. Like I said, we're doing this every single week where we will be having matchups with different teams in our divisions. So make sure to subscribe to Locked On Orioles and Locked On Red Sox so you never miss an episode. You can follow me on Twitter at GFSTARR1 and Locked On Red Sox is LO_Red Sox. You can follow Connor at Connor_Newcomb_ and Locked On Orioles is at Locked On Orioles with no underscores. As always, thanks for tuning in and go Red Sox and go Orioles.